Okay, everybody, we're going to kick off. If those of you at the back would like to maybe take a seat so that we can finish in time for lunch and cake, apparently. I knew that would get everyone's attention. Just have to mention cake. Just to pick up on something that David, I think it was, said something at the end of the session. And I was thinking about this yesterday as I was coming here and meeting with Rachel and Helen, the whole word about recalibrate, because that's actually a very musical term as well. And I was just thinking this morning as I endlessly, ceaselessly tune my guitar. It's just one of those things you just have to do. Not like keyboard players and drummers who kind of have it easy. They don't always have to keep tuning. But those of us with wooden instruments or those of you who play woodwind or other things, you know you have to continually tune. And I felt this morning just as I was, I've got a little pedal there and it's a little tuner pedal. And what that is doing consistently, it recalibrates my strings to the pitch that they should be. And I just thought that's a great kind of picture, isn't it? That actually the only way it works really is if I plug my guitar into it. And I just felt it's the same way with God. How do we recalibrate? How do we actually tune our instrument to the perfect pitch? Well, we actually have to plug in. And so that's just a little symbol there for you. If you'd like to come and view my tuner at any point, then you're perfectly welcome. Okay, I thought I would start with just telling you a few stories about myself. I am going to try to keep to a kind of script. Otherwise, the bell will ring and Rachel will say, time. I've got the bell. Oh, okay. I'll ring it myself and say, for goodness sake, be quiet. Because sometimes I can go down little tracks and tricks and I get a little carried away at times. So I'm going to have my eyes on my iPad from time and again. Because actually, when I also wrote this the other day, I just felt that actually, as I was writing, that there were things I didn't want to miss. But I thought I'd start off with, actually, that really I've put there, Sue and Aldi, this is your life. That a lot of those pictures really sum up me. And let me just tell you a little bit, because of the things that I carry, when I look back through my life, I've always carried them. Even long before I even contemplated the fact that there was a God, or even contemplated taking a step towards God, these things have always been in me, which I now notice retrospectively. That I didn't just suddenly become interested in these things, they've always been in me. And I think one of the things I've always felt about God is that nothing is wasted. No moment, no history, no trauma, no terror, no triumph. Nothing is wasted on that journey. And so as I've looked back over my many decades, I'm going to bring to you some past stuff, but they're actually future stuff as well, and they're stuff that I'm carrying. So as you see there, there's a Dalek. I will exterminate. There's always been something about Daleks for me. I was one of those Doctor Who viewers. And I think what I loved about the Daleks, and I loved Doctor Who because it was about time travel. And I was only very little at the time, but I was fascinated by the future, fascinated by time travelling, fascinated by visiting other planets and changing cultures. So much so that my uncle made me a full-size Dalek suit. And it really was. I was only 8 at the time, so when I say full-size, it was probably around here. I could climb inside it. I had sink plungers, as you do for those exterminations. And I used to be in it day and night. How totally unhygienic. And the challenge was, actually, when I used to go shopping in it, with my mum, you can imagine that, can't you? Going down the high street in Southampton with this Dalek. The difficulty was always kind of managing the massive steps from my house, because that was actually very difficult in a Dalek suit. So many times the Dalek actually fell and I had to be helped up. But I carried on, I pursued. And I'm not quite sure what happened to my Dalek suit, it disappeared. And that is one of probably my biggest sadnesses of all time. Where is my Dalek suit? Anyone know? But I think in me, there's always been this fascination with the future. In the words of Freddie Mercury, I always wanted to live forever. I would love to be 100, 200, 300, 400. I would love to actually live in future times because it fascinates me. It scares me, but it fascinates me. I've always been interested in technology. I am a self-confessed geek. I love it. I love gadgets. I write reviews for magazines on gadgets. Anything that's a gadget, I just love it. Surround myself with gadgets, not people, but gadgets. And I believe that the more I know, the less I know. And that's what I'm finding as I'm looking towards the future and placing myself in the future, present future, is all this information, actually, sometimes we end up knowing less than we've ever known before. Do you ever feel that? We have never had so much information, but maybe there's never been a time where we really don't know. There's so much that's happening. The second one is there's a kind of a Lego model of me. Because I've always been interested in music. I've loved music ever since I was young. I used to go on to my parents about buying me a guitar. So at the age of 8, as well as a Dalek suit, a lot happened at 8. I'm not quite sure what that is. Maybe some of the prophetic people amongst us will say 8 is the perfect number. I don't know. It's new beginnings. So at the age of 8, they bought me a guitar, and it was probably the worst coloured guitar you could ever imagine. It was that kind of orange caramac colour, but it was my guitar. It didn't matter what it looked like. And so my favourite game was Top of the Pops. So I used to basically introduce myself. I tell you, I gave myself an incredible introduction. And then I would sing my song, and then I'd be dancing around myself, as they used to do, and then I'd give myself an amazing round of applause, and then I would introduce myself again. And there was this endless cycle of Top of the Pops, just endless going on, just round and round, because I loved music. And I think as I look back and as I look towards my future as well, this is what I think about music. It's a language that transcends thought, age, and conscious barriers. It carries enough sound to change hearts and change nations. It heralds heaven, but at the same time encompasses earth. It's that link, it's that highway, it's that Jacob's ladder. It's able to reflect and reveal the greatest artist of all, which is God. And I guess I'm trying to realize more that as I art my heart, I celebrate the God who walks with me through every octave of my song, every chapter of my book, and every color of my palette. And as a songwriter, one of the things I am is a storyteller. I love stories. In fact, that's what we are. Sometimes I shy away from even the word evangelist because it has that air about it to some people. We're storytellers, aren't we? We're telling stories. We're telling God's story. We're telling our story. And at the same time as we do that, we yearn out of others their story. We mingle stories together. And then I guess the third thing up there is a phrase that I used to use all the time as a child. It's not fair. I used to use it about everything that happened in the house. Why did I have to do the washing up and my brother didn't? Just little things. It's not fair. I used to look at things that were happening in the nation, things that were happening to politics, things that were happening to my friends, and those three words kept coming up. It's not fair. And I think probably that's one of the biggest tug of wars in my heart when I think of fairness and justice. When I look out at the world and I think, what is fair? What is just? God, how are you going to break into this situation? And I guess throughout the years I've put here, I've been sometimes an annoying, but always an authentic champion for those that have no voice. I remember being part of a band called Heartbeat way back in the 80s, early 90s. I was so young at the time. And one of the tours that we did was Be a Voice to the Nation. And that's always been part of it. Let's speak, let's be a voice, let's be a voice for the voiceless. And then we did a tour with the NSPCC to raise money for Childline. It's always been, maybe because some of the things that I felt in my life where I wasn't heard, where I didn't feel I fitted in, you get a burden for others, don't you? You get a heart for others. And I guess, well, I know I've still got it. I carry with me just that desire for others. that shout, that roar about situations in people's lives, but also in this world that we live in. So I guess the reason why I've shown those few pictures is a few decades later, since I was 8, obviously, I carry the same DNA. Through triumph, trauma, transition, and terror, this is the God who has made me. I'm learning that nothing is wasted, that God turns ashes into beauty, that an obsession for detail and a penchant for adventurous creativity does not mean that I'm weird or schizophrenic. I've always wondered how I used to do accountancy, and people would always go, how can you be a musician and be an accountant? So I've always grown up feeling I didn't fit. But actually, you know, so many of us, God is our integrating piece. That why do we have to conform to stereotypical thinking, or this is how it should be? God has enabled us. God has made us creative. God is the greatest creator of all. And that actually, the never-ending story of rescue and redemption is always one of divine love. So I tell you a little bit of my story because it's not working. There you go, thank you. Because we need to allow other people to tell their story. So I very deliberately told you my story because I really believe it's important that we allow others to tell their story without fear of being judged or criticized or ostracized or, worse still, patronized. And I just wonder how much of a place the church is for listening. Are we in danger sometimes of prioritizing slick and seemingly successful church programs rather than facilitating church as a collaborative learning and listening community? And I've really been feeling church should be a listening community, a learning community. And essentially, I came to faith because someone bothered to turn up every Sunday outside my parents' house in a purple mini. The little things we remember, to take me to Millbrook Pentecostal Church. Matt, if you're there. They waited 15 minutes for me to show, otherwise she drove away. Some weeks I did, some weeks I didn't. But do you know what the killer punch for me was in terms of me coming to faith? It wasn't necessarily the big meetings or the clever words. It was Janet Beer in her purple mini waiting 15 minutes for me, because when I actually did get into that mini, she listened to me the whole way. That was my listening place. She listened. And I think I wonder how often nowadays our churches are places to listen, where people can tell their story. No, the second slide. There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you. I wonder how many people in our world are in agony because they have the story inside them, and yet they cannot find a place to unburden their story without fear of being judged, criticized, condescended, or patronized. Shouldn't our churches be that kind of place where we can listen to people with love? Because this is the age of story. Why do people therefore say that in church they feel silenced? From advertisers to Netflix to Instagram, stories are all around us. Are we listening? Why else are there, get ready, stats people, over 2.23 billion active Facebook users? There are 500 million tweets per day, 20 million per hour, 333,000 per minute, and 6,000 per second. I knew it would blow your mind. 335 million active Twitter users. There's 1.9 billion YouTube users. 5 billion videos watched per day. 300 hours of video is uploaded per minute. People have things to share. Now, it may be what you had for breakfast, but actually the other end of it, sometimes you read things that break your heart. From the sublime to the ridiculous, people are sharing their story. This is the share age, the share generation. And social media is actually an incredible place for people of all ages, all backgrounds to share. I guess my question is, are we listening? Where are we listening? And how are we listening? Next slide. And we'll come back to this in a little breakout time. Are we in danger of prioritizing slick and successful church programs rather than being learning and listening communities? Are we a church who listens? And maybe in your groups you can share some positive ways of, yes, this is what we're doing. Okay, let me change tack a little bit. One of the other things that the Dalek represents is I have just a fascination with the present future. I am fascinated by the digital age and the technological age. It's not simply a new app on your smart device or being able to open your front door via iris recognition. You can tell I'm smiling because I love the thought of it. Or it's not even just a double tap on your smartphone to Apple Pay. Or it's not even about buying a domestic robot to mow your lawn, vacuum your floors, bring you coffee, or act as a mobile entertainment droid, all of which sound incredible. That's one end of it. But actually, there's another phrase, and David was helpful when he said, today you'll be hearing different language. And some of you may have heard this, but a lot of futurists and scientists and people, actually, when you listen to TED Talks, they're talking about the age of singularity. Yeah, that's right. And the age of singularity basically means that never before has there been so much happening at this time that it's almost like exponential growth, extra fast, super fast, hyper fast. Everything is changing about the future. And it isn't just about gadgets and smart homes. It's actually about, what does it mean to be human? And I think this is one of the most poignant, difficult challenge that we've got, that there seems to be another evolution in the human race. Not only is there now just humans and machines, but it's the merging of humans and machines. And people are talking about humanoid droids. People are talking about intelligent avatars. In fact, there's a robot called Sophia. And not only is she a citizen of Saudi Arabia and probably has more rights than any other woman in Saudi Arabia, but she also has got, I think she's called the innovation officer for New York, for the human rights. What's that called over there? The UN. UN. Thank you, for the UN. She's getting, there's also a lady that we'll see in a minute, Binar, who's an intelligent avatar. She's actually spoke and given lectures at West Point Military School in America. So I'm not just talking about devices or apps. I'm actually talking about this whole challenge of what it is to be human. The big question is, how are we discipling people to be able to position themselves within this changing world? How are we helping people navigate their way through? It says, do not conform to the pattern of this world in Romans, but actually we kind of need to know what the pattern of the world is. And the pattern of the future world is not the pattern of the past world, because things are changing. How are we helping, encouraging ourselves and our emerging generations to understand the pattern of this world, how it's changing, and how to position yourself as people of faith to navigate your way through it? Let's watch a little animation. One of the top futurists, Ray Kurzweil, is going to give us a 1-minute definition on the age of singularity.
What is singularity?
The nature of technological progress is exponential. If I count linearly, 30 steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I get to 30. If I count exponentially, 2, 4, 8, 16, 30 steps later, I'm at a billion. It makes a dramatic difference. Now a lot happens in 6 months. Technology feeds on itself and it gets faster and faster. In about 40 years, the pace of change is going to be so astonishingly quick that you won't be able to follow it unless you enhance your own intelligence by merging with the intelligent technology we're creating. Our computers are not going to be these rectangular devices we put in our pocket. They're going to be inside our bodies and brains, and we're going to be a hybrid of biological and non-biological intelligence. So that's such a profound transformation that we've borrowed this metaphor from physics and call that a singularity.
Next slide, please. Ray Kurzweil. Ultimately, we're going to recreate the powers of human intelligence in a machine. By the time we get to the 2040s, we'll be able to multiply human intelligence a billionfold. It will be a profound transformation, but it really is what human beings are all about. Human beings transcending limitations. We make ourselves stronger, we make ourselves smarter with our tools, and that's what the singularity will do. And he is one of the leading futurists, advising, researching, developing AI. And he says singularity will enable humanity to transcend biological limitations. And many people are saying, is this the next major evolution? From brain chips to smart devices within our bodies, from sex bots, which are already being manufactured and sold to individuals or establishments. In fact, people are already talking about whether they can marry their sex bot, which is a humanoid droid sex bot. I won't go into any more details. To hotels staffed by robots, to intelligent avatars, the future is shaping up to be one major sci-fi movie, which is already coming true. Next slide. Even Waterstones. I love this. Post-apocalyptic fiction has been moved to our current affairs section. Next slide. Says it all. And then we have the intelligent avatar, Bina. She's still living. They've made this amazing avatar head just looking like her. And what they've done is she's basically saved all her digital reflections, her life, and they've created a mind file. And that mind file is getting more and more intelligent, developing a personality. And this is Bina. She's actually already taught at that West Point military school. And people are saying that mind files and mind file websites are realizing that intelligent avatars are the next wave of technology that will enable us to live forever. What's the search? What's the need? What's the hunger? For purpose, for eternal life, for meaning. So even though the pattern of life changes and we need to know how the pattern changes, the actual human needs remain the same, don't they? The big question is, and the next slide, are we discipling people to be equipped to position themselves within this super fast, shape-shifting, changing world? And then are career domains such as coding, ethics, and science, are they the urgent mission fields of today? Because it's coders that are really changing a lot of our ethics. They're allowing so much to be able to be happening in humanoids, in robots, in artificial intelligence. So come on, coders. Come on, gamers. What about virtual reality and virtual reality gaming? These are our mission fields. And are we encouraging people to really get stuck into those mission fields? Because I tell you, a lot of things are going to be hit and miss in those mission fields. Ethics, coding, science. Next slide. But do not fear. Before iTunes, before the iPod, before the iPhone, before the iPad, even before iLife itself, I am. And finally, just to change another tack, I just want to say a few things about worship. So we've looked at story, we've looked at the future, and I just want to say something about worship, because I've been leading the musical expression of worship for decades all over the world, for all ages, within many different contexts. Mud huts in Uganda, Bedouin tents in Palestine, luxury hotels in America. That was a good one, I remember that. Festivals and church networks in the UK, even a pet blessing in California. The song list was difficult to find. I would like to be, actually, the first worship leader to lead worship as a hologram. I'll leave that one with you. A few observations. If God is the greatest artist, a painter, poet, storyteller, scriptwriter, sculptor, designer, then why are our worship encounters often one-dimensional? Facilitated mainly by songs and music. Now, I'm not advocating to remove those. I love songs. I love music. That's what I do. That's been my passion. It isn't to remove, it's to add on. Surely there's a wealth of creativity to be unlocked and released. Church communities exploring creative worship environments because creativity speaks. Creativity is participatory. Creativity engages so many people at so many levels. It engages my brother, and my brother doesn't know God. I believe creativity is going to be one of the influential areas where we can bring people into our shared environments because of the creativity, the poetry, the photography. If we're made in the image of God, then why don't we pray that we can see a new creative renaissance where corporate worship reflects the spectrum of artistry found in God and therefore in us. So maybe we just need a small start. Let's fill our worship teams, not just with musicians and singers, but why don't we populate them with all of the creative arts? Yeah. So that as a worship team, we reflect just a little of the spectrum and the artistry of God. Second, the digital age is affecting our ability to wait, to dwell, to abide, and to deeply engage with God. Instant digital gratification means that it happens now. We don't want to wait for the information to come through that search engine. Do you ever notice yourself getting more impatient? We want it now, we want to lift the screen, want to look at the screen, we want to put the virtual headset on, and we want it now. It's creating a culture of rapid response. Have you felt that? Have you noticed that? How can we then help one another to slow down and abide? God is not an app once opened, immediately delivers. How good are we applying worship encounters to life so that our worship together has legs? It isn't just something we do in a room, but it actually applies to our life. How can we model and encourage people to dwell in the waiting zone even when an instant reward is not visible? There are many songs about waiting. How ironic. Waiting here for you. Not for too long, God. Or, well, I've waited and nothing's happened. I believe that is some recalibration, because being picked up with this rapid response or this accelerated culture, sometimes we approach God like that, don't we? We approach worship like that. Let's do it fast. Let's do it now. What's next? What's going to happen? Is there a reward in sight? Well, actually, all we are asked to do is dwell, abide. Also, we don't have to remember anything anymore because the cloud wins. And I say that so many others do as well. This has developed a trend towards shallow thinking. And we need to encourage in ourselves and one another deep thinking, deep engagement. Journey takers, not drive-through consumers, where our pursuit of God is the default search engine, not Google. And then finally, how many times have I heard people say, "I didn't get much from that worship"? Maybe we've said it once or twice. Or, "I didn't get much from that service," as if it's all about getting. And I just sense so often the pervasive mindset of consumerism has so entered our church, hasn't it? where we rate the worship, we rate the speakers, we rate the meetings, just like we're rating movies on Netflix or restaurants on TripAdvisors. Where often it's about what we get, where actually church should be about what we give. Can you imagine how different our times together would be if we come to give? And consumerism, I think, is killing the participatory, the community, the interactive nature of our church meetings. So how do we nurture participation without sacrificing quality? Does quality even matter? Discuss. How do we encourage a congregation to be givers first, not getters first? Consumers consume, participators participate. That's the wisdom for today, guys. How different our times would be corporately if everyone came with the attention to give. Question is, are high stages, loud PAs, smoke machines, LED light shows, and timed programs with a worship countdown at the beginning, are they the enemies of participation? Next slide. So I've touched on a few things. Where is my Dalek suit? Story. We need to allow people to tell their story. Are our churches the place for people to tell their story without fear? Are we listening communities? And then we look to the future. Are we discipling people to be equipped to position themselves in this fast-changing world? How much do we know? How much should we know? How can we help our emerging generations to navigate through this changing culture, where actually it's the issue of what is human that's going to be one of the biggest factors? And then worship. What do you observe about the meeting culture of your congregation? Consumers or participators? How can we nurture participation? And do our worship environments, do they need to change to engage and empower digital natives? What I mean by that, people who have just been born in the digital age. Are we sadly lacking? Do we actually engage with digital natives? Lots of food for thought. Now, I think it'd be good to divide up into groups, maybe of four or five. And don't tackle everything there. Just tackle one thing or two things, and then we'll come back together in 15. So please move around. If you need coffee just to stimulate your brain cells, or if you need to just to plug that brain chip in, then please feel totally free. I'd quite like a brain chip that allowed me to speak Spanish. So please turn around, talk about what you've heard. Any questions, any thoughts? And then we'll come back together in 15 minutes.